Krishna. You are listening to the number one Hare Krishna podcast in the world, the late morning program. I am so deeply honored to have His Holiness Sachinandan Swami joining me here. Maharaj, thank you so much for joining me.
It is a great pleasure and to be with a famous podcast, and I will try my best to say something which is uplifting to all of us.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. I throughout the years, I've always seen you as someone who has so much to offer in the subject of spiritual transformation and sadhana and japa and chanting and kirtan. So I really am so honored, and our viewers are also very thankful, I'm sure. Maharaj, please let's start off with maybe not everyone knows how you came in contact with devotees. So let's start there. Please tell us how you came in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement.
Thank you very much. This is a good introduction. Through the TV, I appreciated very much modern music at that time, rock and roll. And one of my heroes had died. And the TV was all about the goodbye program for him. He was a member, I don't know if the young people know this band still, the Rolling Stones. And it was a very sad and sobering program. I still remember this heart-wrenching scene where the swimming pool in which he had drowned was shown with his two dogs sitting around the swimming pool and crying that the master had died. And so the next, let us say, band on the show was an exciting new band managed by George Harrison, the Radha Krishna Temple album of London. And they sang the famous Hare Krishna kirtan with the gong at the end. And I don't know what happened to me. I was very sad, but after I had heard the mantra, two things were there. I felt intuitively in my heart that this person, this rock star, had not really died, but he had just moved on. Life is eternal. I somehow felt that and derived great consolation from it. And after this, I was hoping to meet devotees, and I was very fortunate. I could meet devotees as they were chanting in front of the department store. It was part of their, let us say, promotion tour. They had come from England to play in famous German clubs. And when they had time, they did Harinam Sankirtan. So I met them, and I must have been around 16 years at that time, or 15 even. And I again stood before them, totally mesmerized by the Maha Mantra, by the song. And at the end, I asked them to write the mantra down for me. And then as a young boy, I would just sing. I had a little group. They were called the Strangers. And we would sometimes, before concerts and rehearsals, sing just the song, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And if you ask me, how did you come into this? I think by the mercy of the holy names.
Wow, wonderful. So Maharaj, the topic of spiritual transformation, I know you mentioned that it's a topic that's very dear to your heart. Could you please kind of, first of all, explain what it is and why are you so interested in that topic and explaining that to devotees?
Yeah. See, many people believe many things. Many people, especially in the religious field, are even prepared to quarrel with others for their beliefs, Christians against Muslims and so on. But I really feel all this belief is not relevant when one does not really change the heart or purify the heart. There's a famous German scientist, Karl Friedrich von Weizsäcker, who said, "I don't ask any longer people what they believe. I look at how they perceive the world and how they act." And I believe very strongly that Vaishnavism must bring the transformation or change of the heart about. And I thought you would ask me this question, why I think it is so important that there is a transformation of the heart. And I found something in the Bhagavatam about this. Prabhupada, he says, the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart. And a little later he says, it is expected by all means that by discharging devotional service, regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. If there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel-framed, for it is not melted even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. He writes this as a purpose to the Bhagavatam, the second canto, that part where sadhana or spiritual practice is described. And in that verse, famous verse, it says, Tat ashma sharam hridayam batedam. It says, certainly that heart is steel framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change. So yes, I always have thought that something must happen in my heart. To conclude this, I had a crisis maybe 25 years ago. I saw that not much had changed. Yes, the frisura, the hairstyle had changed. Yes, I was dressing no longer in my old clothes, but in this. And yes, my lingo had changed. I didn't say, hello, hello, hello. I said, Hari Bol. But my heart had not really changed. I've seen that there were attachments to just be liked by others and to be praised. I saw very, very discouraging attachments of the small mind. Then I said, stop, I have not joined the Hare Krishna movement because I had no group or I needed association. I in the beginning, I joined despite the Hare Krishna movement because it was so difficult for me to fit. I was coming from a different cultural background and everything. So I had joined because there was a promise. The promise of Srila Prabhupada that by chanting the holy names, I would purify my heart and I would move step by step forward to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He says it like this in a Panda program in Mumbai. But I was miles, light years away. So I thought, okay, it seems to not work for me. Maybe I should go into another spiritual process. But let me, before I do this, give it one more try. Let me find out what is Prabhupada's way, how the change of heart can happen. And let me study his books, his example, his statements. And I arrived for the second time at the door of the Holy Name. This time, however, I had already some background. I had read the Shastras and I gave it a try. I thought this must work for me, and I started to go in the month of Kartik to the sacred land of Vrindavan, and just for 1 month dedicate myself to chant from morning to later in the evening. And yeah, and I feel here I am. I have not changed anything. I have seen yet a great fulfillment in the heart and many, many gifts of the Holy Name.
Thank you. Maharaj, you were mentioning 25 years ago you had that, you know, kind of that crisis. So how did you know that you weren't transformed? Like, obviously there was some transformation on your part in the sense of you had advanced in Krishna consciousness. So what's a real transformation versus like transformation on the surface level?
Yes. You ask such wonderful questions, Namrasa. It is such a nice, so nice, so intelligent, so to the point, wonderful. Real transformation is something quite serious. It starts with at least having a sense of a spiritual identity. Like we say, I'm not the body, I'm a soul. It's a sense. We may not yet know details about our spiritual identity, but we have that sense, Adam is more than the body. Then it brings different thoughts with it, a real transformation. Then it brings about different activities. The transformation, the inner transformation, sinks deeper and deeper. It brings about new dreams. And finally, it brings about a new life. I would like to give you a little story where our listeners will certainly laugh about a superficial transformation as opposed to real transformation. There was once a simple washerman who somehow understood that I can make more money when I'm a sadhu. People will give me donations. I don't have to work so hard. So he sat down and meditated. Oh, he pretended to meditate. He closed his eyes like this. And people would offer fruits, vegetables, sometimes a few rupees to him, and he really saw it worked. So once it so happened that his beloved team partner, the donkey, died. It was his natural time, and as a result, this dobi, this washerman, went into a prolonged meditation. Finally, an assistant announced, in 4 days Guru Maharaj will end his meditation. Everyone come around, because what a sadhu says after his long meditation is particularly profound and enters the heart very deeply. So he was there meditating. Then he started to cry. Everyone thought, very good, he's really in ecstasy. Then he opened his eyes and he wailed out, "Oh, my donkey was the best donkey and he had to die." You know, everyone thought, oh no, he's just still a dobi. He has a good, nice haircut. He has a good dress. He even sits without moving, but inside he thinks of donkeys and of all these things. Real transformation, everyone, is not so easy. It is not so cheap. And the best way to understand it is by going to a shloka of Hari Bhakti Vilas, which I would just like to share with you. See, we here in Europe have famous alchemists. What they did is, they were, that's at least the legend, they took lead or any other cheap metal and applied a certain process by which they contacted the prima materia, the original material energy, and used that so that their lead would turn into gold. They were highly looked after by royalty because of this alchemical transformation. But many historians say they tried to do it, and maybe a few were successful, but because it's so difficult to do that, it's mostly a story. May it be as it is, but let us look what is would be necessary to make to turn lead into gold. Namarasa, you would have to take what is called in physics the strong force, that is the force which holds molecules and atoms together, so that you have the structures, the molecular structures, which ultimately bring out the structures which we see with our physical eyes. It's a very strong binding force. It's really, really difficult to split this. You need nuclear forces really to do that. So to affect a total change, ooh, it's not such a cheap thing. And the Hari Bhakti Vilas is explaining how it could be possible. I will save you from the Sanskrit, but let's go right into the English. As bell metal, when mixed with mercury, can be transformed into gold. So, okay, so you have to take bell metal and somehow mix mercury in an alchemical process. It's not just putting it together, you need to agar-kadabra do something with it. As bell metal, when mixed with mercury, can be transformed into gold, a person, even though not yet pure, can be transformed into a twice-born Brahmana simply by the process of initiation. My dear everyone, let us mark this. It is said not by initiation, it's the process of initiation. It's an ongoing process which in the old time meant instructions on the Urdhvapundra, the path which leads upwards. Tapa, we have it in Krishna consciousness. We have the tapasya of the four regulative principles. Naam, the holy name, then the Gayatri mantra, and yajna, offering. And so someone enters this school, so to say, of the the process, and as he is in the school, his heart will change. That's at least expected when he does everything right, and he will see, wow, I feel compassion. Where I was envious, I feel real joy when someone advances. Where I was attached to enjoy something, I think, how could it be used in Krishna's pleasure, for Krishna's pleasure? And he really thinks, oh my God, I have changed. I have really changed. And to conclude this, Am I too long-winded or can I talk?
No, please. Good. I'll interrupt you, Maharaj.
Yes. Please. This year, I'm happy to announce I celebrated my 50th birthday. What I mean with this is I'm trying to serve Srila Prabhupada since 50 years. I'm much older. I'm a scandal. I'm so old. 68, I believe, or 67, something.
68.
Yeah.
You don't look it.
No, here you can see. There are three letters which Yamaraj writes you. One is gray hair. Then the teeth start to wiggle in the mouth, and there is and bad smell from the mouth, you know. So these are the three letters. Pay attention. You're coming close to the final examination. Because this was 50 years in the attempt to do useful service, the devotees had been so kind to make a photo gallery, and it showed photos of these 50 years. It ended under a tree in Vrindavan, banyan tree, where I was just absorbed in chanting the holy name. I don't even know how anyone found me and made the photo. Anyway, and it showed me on the stage chanting with 33,000 people and doing our Gauranga Bhajan group concerts. When we went to Russia and the Eastern Bloc after the, you know, Glasnost and Perestroika. Anyways, it showed the life and the fortunate opportunities for service. But there was one photo which I thought, what does this do there? It was the starting photo. It showed Jaigora and now he's Bhakti Vaibhava Maharaj. At that time he was Avinash Chandra. And then there was someone with long hair, dressed in jeans, and you couldn't see his face because the hair was before. And he was standing there like a karate fighter within that Harinam group. And maybe because I was so excited to see that photo gallery, I somehow didn't recognize. I thought, who's that young person there? He doesn't seem to fit. He seems to be so foolish and so angry, you know. And then the devotee said, "That's you." And I looked twice. And yes, then I remember that was my style. I was dressed like the black clothes and, you know, and all this. And at that time, I cried. Usually Germans don't cry in the public. That is not acceptable. I'm still a little bit shy to cry. And I mean, I don't do it. But here I had to cry, and I had to run in the corner and wait until the wave of emotion was somehow calm, because I could see that there was a change. Something had changed. Something had transformed from that young and angry rebel to that person who was sitting under the banyan tree in Vrindavan and absorbing himself in the holy name. And I was so grateful to Srila Prabhupada, who had started me in this process, who had given me the sacred initiation and the process of devotional service, who had put me, so to say, in the washing machine and or the transformation machine. And I was just so overwhelmed with gratitude, because it was not because of me. It was, here I will say it the second time, despite of me that it had worked. Yeah.
Wow. It seems, Maharaj, that there's a certain first transformation when someone comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, like a real dramatic one, so to say, like in the way you were saying about your, you know, you had a different look and everything. But then another transformation comes later on, it seems, when that one sort of, for lack of a better term, wears off. Does that look the same for everyone, or is it kind of a case-by-case thing?
Wonderful point you raise. Yes, there are at least two transformations, almost like in the butterfly analogy. At first there are a few stages in its pupation, I think it's called. Then, right. First, you change your behavior, really, and you feel, I don't know, were you born also in Krishna consciousness, Namrasa?
My father became a devotee a month after I was born.
Wow, that is like that. See, our generation had a total different education and environment and so on. And yes, it's almost a cathartic a thing which happened, a catharsis inside. I remember I threw away my school books. I mean, I was also glad because it was very boring for me in the school. But and I said to everyone, I don't need this any longer. And I become a monk. And I was so exhilarated, so absolutely. I was so uncritical towards devotees. I thought everyone is an angel descended from the spiritual world and so on. Devotees tell me you were so enthusiastic, you didn't even sleep. You were so everything had changed, really. But then, when I thought I had left the world, I began to understand, no, the world had not left me. It was sticking. And then one had to look anew. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is a little bit addressed in a pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he takes all his devotees together and they go into this temple which is not occupied for an entire year and is therefore very dusty and unclean. It's the Gundicha Mandir. And then they cleanse it twice. First, the straw and the big dirt, so to say, is taken away. But then they need to take the water and wash the finer dirt, the dust, which is all-pervading and puri, and the sand. And only when they cleanse it a second time, then the temple is so clean that Lord Jagannath can be placed on the altar. So this is this has a deeply analogical dimension, this cleaning of the temple. We must twice clean our life. First we do change a few habits and change ourselves like this, but then the finer things have to be cleansed, which is, Mahaprabhu speaks about this in the Matya Lila, I think it's, as far as I remember, the 20th chapter. He says it must be the desires for profit, I want to win, what's in for me here, you must learn to be selfless. The desire for profit, that we had already distinction and adoration. Yes, you're no longer after so many clicks on your Facebook. You are thinking, Who cares? I mean, for service, maybe like when you have a podcast, you want the whole world to listen to it and to spread the good news of these subjects which you want, but not for service. And what is a diplomatic behavior? You say one thing to reach your end, and so many unacceptable things which you still are attached to, but which you keep away from the public eye, and while you pretend to be a big devotee. So these are the most subtle things. They have to do with purification of the mind, of the most subtle layers of our personality, our body, our consciousness, all of this. So yes, twice. And I think that we who are on the spiritual path should keep these two cleansing processes in mind. We should not give up that, okay, I have done so much, I've tried so much, I have then the world has come back to me and has again mesmerized me. What to do? Maybe the process doesn't work. No, we should now see what are the obstacles which are now there, which I need to address at this moment. Which anattas are there? Maybe I commit some aparatas in my life unknowingly. And we should then take care of the most subtle things, which all have to do with the false ego, you know, and its endless needs, its endless hunger. But when we are facing this, the altar of the heart is clean, and then the Lord can appear there, and that is the fulfillment of each devotional life.
What do you think are ways to create favorable circumstances of transformation? Because it seems that when we perform our spiritual activities, we get into kind of a routine of doing things as a grihastha or someone, you know, not just grihasthas, but I'm saying from my perspective, it's, you know, we get into a routine of our, you know, of our chanting, of our puja and our reading and associating with devotees, but we might not seem like that transformation is actually happening in a impactful way, because you're kind of just going through the motions of doing your devotion. You're checking it off your list every day, because life just happens, you know, work and children and things like that. For our listeners, I'm sure many of us are family people and working people. So what would you say, how to create a favorable circumstance to facilitate transformation?
Thank you very much. Please allow me to first say that this is crucial in the process of transformation, to create favorable circumstances. There was a time when I would go every year to Mumbai to take Panchakarma treatment, you know, the Ayurvedic treatment. And I had a very nice doctor. His name is Dr. Naram. He's still practicing. And he used to take on patients who from a low income status. So there was this one boy which he treated who came really from the slums of Mumbai. He told me that I'm trying to treat this boy since a half a year, but there is no improvement. There's only an how do you say it? His symptoms worsen. If I had any idea, I said, I'm not an Ayurvedic doctor and I have no Ayurvedic idea, but why don't you ask him what he does, where he lives, what is his environment? And if maybe it comes from there, the illness. Next time I visited him, he said, Swamiji, you gave the right tip. Yeah, really? I said, yes. This boy was serving in a chemical factory, working in a chemical factory. He would jump into these huge pots with a line around his belly, and he would swim in the pots as a human stir system. You know, when he would move his legs and his arms, he would stir up the chemical broth, and in this way it got turned over, and finally, after doing this for some time, it would mix in the proper way and the right chemical solution was there. Really? He said, yes, only in India. And I said, so what did you say? I said, not even 1 millisecond you can continue doing this, because the chemicals are absorbed through the pores of the body and go into your organs. No, it's not a wonder that we can't cure you. You have to, I take you out of this circumstance. And because it was and is still going very well, his practice, either he engaged him in his Ayurvedic factory to make pills or something, or he gave money, I forgot, to maintain him. But the idea was to take him out of that environment, and then only the medications could work. I think many of us are not paying sufficiently attention to our environment. Am I in an environment that creates anxieties for me? Am I in an environment where I am in relationships that are just harmful for the two of us, or the three of us, or four of us, and so on? Am I, you know, environment is really thing, is really everything outside of your body and your mind. It can be food, you know, all this is external to you, and therefore to create favorable environment is crucial. Now, you have relevantly stated that most of us are in certain situations where we just have to go on. We have to earn, for instance, and there is really no better job or no alternative job available, and so on. Then I always say, create a sacred space which you visit as much as it is practical. Like maybe in the morning, for half an hour, you have some spiritual practice where you chant, where you read, and you are in a peaceful environment, and you will see how this works on you, how it influences you. Or if you should have to go early to work and it is not possible to spend the morning in this, then do it in the evening. But create a nice mental and physical environment for you, which you visit just for a little time, and then this will be like entering a spiritual perfume shop. Yes, in Persia, when you go in Tehran over the roads, you find these brilliant perfume shops. So I once went into the perfume shop to get this amazing rose flavor for our deity Shishi Radha Kanhaiya Lal. So I went there, and when I came out, everyone went whoo, because I was smelling so extraordinary good from all these perfumes. So in the same way, everyone, I can only say, go into the perfume shop of spiritual practice, you know, get your mind free, get the clouds of the mind, then you will see, everyone will see, my God, what did you do? Namrasa, you look so effulgent, or someone, or any other comment like this will be there. just absorbed a little. I call it a moment in eternity, or moments in eternity, which you spend in your spiritual practice. And maybe from time to time go on pilgrimage, visit places that are sacred where you can be inspired.
Right. So it seems that for devotees, to create a sacred space in the home is important, to visit those places and to gain inspiration from doing that, and visiting also, you know, holy places, which we can discuss later on. It seems that in your transformation, you started with, you know, you said the holy name, and then the second time also was the holy name. So what is the role of the holy name, would you say, in the transformational process? What's the role of the holy name in that?
I think we all agree, transformation is not a cheap thing. It is not something which you attain automatically by just entering a movement, putting a tilak on your forehead. It requires some work inside, some inner work. But ultimately, a holy name, or let us say that, my mind was just, ultimately, you need a strength or a process which comes from outside. You call this Svarup Siddhi Bhakti. It's bhakti, bhakti activities which you do, which in themselves bear a certain shakti, and this shakti begins to work on you. It's, in other words, not by your own energy or abilities. It is by the mercy of Bhakti Devi, who becomes attentive to you when you perform these typical activities which are in this type of bhakti. I'm speaking of sadhu sangha, hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting the holy names, going to the holy places and worshipping the deities. These, let us say, activities bear in themselves this tremendous power. Jiva Goswami mentions in his Sandavas a rat which comes on the altar, which lives there on the altar, nothing extraordinary in India. And the rat is very hungry and sees on the altar a givik which is just in the process of being extinguished. So because it's so hungry, it thinks this whitish givik is a piece of cheese and bites into it. And as it bites into it, the cotton or whatever the material is gets entangled with the tooth, and the light, which was just in the process of becoming extinguished, flares up again. And the rat has now this burning givik in its mouth. And in a wild attempt to extinguish the flames, he whirls around the head like this in circles towards the and does this towards the deity. Now the rat is an animal which is not very conscious. He has a few things in its program, eating, sleeping, and a few things like this. But by performing this Svarup Siddhi Bhakti activity, this activity which has inherently bhakti in it, experiences the shakti, the bhakti shakti, and it works on him so that he obtains a four-handed form and goes back home, back to Godhead. You know, animals have a different route than human beings when they when they come in contact with bhakti. So, yes, these activities have shakti, and you know yourself. I got to know you as a wonderful kirtan leader who mesmerized a whole huge audience with a very melodious and kirtans which had the right bhava, the right mood, Krishna conscious, devotional mood. And I you know, when all of a sudden I say always the holy name comes, you know, and it's not just music any longer, but it's Krishna in the atmosphere. Then something works on the heart of yourself and of the audience in a way that they think, what was this? This was wonderful. And you know, we have just had a wonderful program in one Buddhistic center with a huge Buddha. The Buddha was at least 4.50 meters or 5 meters high, and we had a totally new people there. They were all, you know, influencers. They could only come on invitation because here in Germany we still have COVID restrictions, and you can only have 50 in a place. And these were people who were totally new. They were writing. They were journalists, TV people, like this. And wow, Namrasa. They did not want to leave the hall when we were finished because they had felt the atmosphere, and they knew anywhere outside this hall is not this bhakti charged atmosphere. They were like cats, you know. Cats are not leaving the oven because there is a warm heat from the oven, because they know if we leave, there's the winter outside and it will be very cold. So intuitively they stay. And these people also had felt not heat but another shakti, the bhakti shakti, and intuitively they stayed. I always say a good program is when the people get up but don't leave the hall. They start to talk about what they have heard, what they have experienced, and you know, from Radha Deshmelos, devotees don't go to bed at the end of the kirtan. They stay in the in the community hall and just go talk.
Yes, it seems that after many years of Krishna consciousness, we've seen so many devotees leave and just feel like if they were stuck and they just said, this is not really for me, because they feel this kind of stuckness, you could say. For the rest of us who kind of have gone through this and who are still going through it, maybe we don't feel that, okay, we need to leave it fully and just kind of go back to material life, although some of us may. But I'm saying for those of us who do feel stuck in Krishna consciousness now, somehow there's a blockage. There's like a wall that we've hit. We don't feel inspired. We don't feel that same flame that we did in the beginning. How do we move out of that kind of block, you could say?
I once met a second generation person. I will not give. I will not talk about the name. It was at the beginning of this nice kirtan program in Radha Desh, which goes over 3 days, I think. And he said to me exactly like this: "I'm stuck. This is my last attempt to." I think he didn't even say it's my last attempt. He just said, "I'm just here to meet old friends and discuss with them what went on for them in their life." But I lost all enthusiasm. And this person, I somehow said, "Well, why don't you give it one attempt? You have chanted, but have you chanted with absorption? you have chanted before, but have you chanted as a service for Krishna, purposefully glorifying Krishna? I said, you need, in my eyes, you need to upgrade your practice to fill this inner fulfillment which you are looking for, which you are hankering for. And it's very simple. It's very simple. When you say to these devotees, chant more, read more, they go, oh, no, that will not work. I tried all this. I always say, chant with absorption. You know, try to just switch off the mind, like it is done in any meditation, including kirtan meditations or japa meditations, and just let the holy name work. Another thing is, most probably they are not engaged according to their capacity. They have not yet found a good engagement. And I have seen, if one can find an engagement for these people who feel a little disappointed in their spiritual life that suits their nature, then they can dig their teeth into this and find something they can hold on. And that's a good starting point, a very good starting point. Another thing I have noticed it, I have somehow had in the last few years a lot of contact with what the older devotees say, call second generation devotees. And I have seen they were born into Krishna consciousness and did everything automatically, like babies, you know. Babies they adopt they adopt the behavior of the grown-ups. It's clear if you put a human being amongst wolves, and there are these wolf children, these are children who were neglected by their parents because the parents were too poor or did not really wish to have them, and so on. But if they grow up amongst wolves, they adopt the behavior of wolves. In Bengal, there are these famous wolves girls. These are little girls, even when they were 14, 15 years old. Their chests were covered with hair, and they howled to the moon because of the association. So this works also in a good way for some time. When you are with devotees as a child, you adopt all this. But there comes this one point where you have to start your own engine. It's almost like a car. It is moved by others, you know, when the ignition doesn't function. Ignition. Yeah. It doesn't work. You can push it with maybe 10 people. So in the same way, many of us, the younger people, are pushed by the environment, and they move on and they do everything according to the social group. They do what is chic, what is to be done there. But at one stage, they have to jumpstart their spiritual life. In other words, they have to be self-motivated. They have to be self-activated, and so on. There are many reasons why we lose our taste. I don't want to speak here in detail about the sad reason, that is, that we create that our disappointment forms into that type of negativity, and then we cannot take responsibility for our miserable state of mind, and we try to project the faults into the exterior world and try to see it in others, and then we create apparatus. Let's not even talk about it. It's such a it's so sad that devotees sometimes get into this. Many reasons what to do. Ramanujacharya says, if every other process has failed, then do one thing, and one thing only. Stay with advanced devotees, and that has an influence. We know that Mahaprabhu took two principles from Ramanujacharya, and one was the service of devotees. And Ramanujacharya made this statement, I have seen miracles happening to people who felt sad and disappointed in their spiritual life and who had come into strong association, devotees who were affectionate to them, who were sharing freely Krishna consciousness with them, and so on. So I could talk for a long list, but let's keep it here in this. When you feel discouraged, it is unfortunately natural. Welcome to the club. It's not so easy to go into the transformation, and you have to go deep enough. But there should be no reason to give up the process. Just find out what could work for you. Discover your glowing yes again. And there's Krishna consciousness. There's so much things you can do. I mean, this is unlimited. You can whatever you like, practically. I mean, there are a few things which I can't think of them at the moment, but I can maybe some sinful activities, but you can do so much. You can be so creative. I was here, we had a guest, a dear guest, Raghunath Prabhu, who started this group Youth of Today, and he gave wonderful programs in Berlin, and we had wonderful time together with Kustuba. They were giving Wisdom of the Sages programs from here, from our little ashram. And one evening, after we had eaten sufficiently, we decided, let the shelter times be revived. And there was, we were in our castle. You have visited the Dharma castle, and there's a big projector. So we saw a shelter concert. And I could see Raghunath was jumping so high and so acrobatically and singing with sufficient vocal strength, and they were playing the guitar, and all this energy, this male energy, and let's not get into psychological details here, all was flowing into the music, and people were so inspired, they jumped into the audience. So you can even be a loud person and engage that in Krishna consciousness. The texts were very spiritual, and what they said in between. So I think there's a place for everyone in this, because we believe, listen, here comes some good philosophy. The materialist looks at the world trying to enjoy it. The jnani and yogi looks away from the world because he feels, my God, this is an entanglement, this is dangerous. But the bhakta doesn't squeeze the world for enjoyment, nor is he afraid of the world and looks away from it. He engages the world in Krishna service. He looks, in other words, beyond these two concepts of karma and jnana, philosophically speaking. And
For me personally, Maharaj, I feel that when I'm critical of other devotees, that's when I feel the most uninspired. And how would you, after 50 years of Krishna consciousness, you've seen from the very beginning during Prabhupada's time till now, how things have changed in a good way, sometimes in a bad way. How do you stay away from that critical mentality?
Yeah, sometimes it devotees can also get on your nerves. The biochemical connection is, they just get you there where your ego is, and some devotees make terrible mistakes also, objectively speaking. Namrasa, I think like this. I try to see whatever is good there. They try the spiritual on the spiritual path, their level best, but they may have their conditioned nature, which pulls them in a total opposite way, and they may. So I try to see the way God will see them. I'm trying. That whatever is good, that is accepted. Even as there are two devotees speaking about Krishna. One devotee, this comes in Jiva Goswami's writing, asks, why do you like Krishna so much? The other devotee says, well, he sees the smallest good thing and magnifies it, and even when there is an ocean of offense, he does not see that. That is spiritual vision. Material vision is if we see the mistakes and the problems, but spiritual vision is to try. And I remember I was once in a, you know, when we go to conferences, and we are invited as a speaker, there are speakers before and after. So there was one Christian monk, he had, or was it a father more, who had just come from, I think it was Algeria, and he told us a story about one of the monks. This monk was found with a throat that was cut, and he had bled to death. So he said, those monks who were in the desert trying to help the Bedouins and so on, they were often the object of the attack of religious fundamentalism. You know, the Arabic religions. This particular monk knew, because some of his brothers had been slaughtered or shot or tortured even, that most probably his murderer was on the way to him. So he was right. He was found with a throat, with a cut throat in his body. There were wounds also on the body. But next to him, they found a letter. And the letter said, I pray to the Lord, whom both me and my killer worship, that he gives me the strength to see also this man of my last hour with the same eyes as he sees both of us, the equal eye. He was praying for God to this vision. Now I admit this is a high state of almost sainthood, and we should not always give the highest example, so, which may not be relevant for our level. But I have two visions when devotees get on my nerves. First is, I try to see the way Krishna sees. They're trying, they have become devotees, they see things differently than me. Somehow I may have gotten on their nerves, and now, but let us not quarrel like materialists, as if we had never heard about spiritual life, you know. If that doesn't work, and I'm still totally upset, Then I go to the last bottom line. I think every human being is acting according to data. A little bit like the computer which you use. When you press some buttons, a certain program comes up, Zoom or other programs, Google, or I'm not so expert, but you know, certain programs come up. Sure. And when your desired program doesn't come up, you don't bash the computer. You know, he's just, there are some processes, and somehow now the wrong program has come up. Maybe even a program which you don't really want to see because it is violence or something which you really, or anything which you don't want to see. But you don't smash the computer. It's the program which works, and so on, so that is the last thing, you know, when I get so much on my nerves, and it does happen, you know, the sometimes one is misunderstood, or the institution in the hectic of doing things is not considering the more subtle points and bulldozes over something, and others feel hurt, you feel hurt, and so on. Then you just understand that, well, this is a machinery which works now according to the data which are there. Change the data, then the machinery might change. If it is open, some system.
I really love that analogy about the computer. So whatever the data is coming through, and if it, you don't smash the computer when something that comes up that's not according to your liking. I really like that. So I appreciate that, because I feel like I can do that sometimes. Going back to the transformation, how do we transform into our spiritual identity? This is a larger topic for sure, but maybe you can touch on that a little.
Yes. Everyone, it is such a pleasure to be here, and I hope I say everything. I hope I say everything in good English. Please excuse, my mother tongue is German. So Prabhupada indicates this in the Bhagavad Gita. And I have studied this a lot. There is a verse, you will like to hear it. I even brought my little orchestra for you.
Oh, great.
Abhyasa yoga yuktena Chetasa nanyagamina paramam purusham divyam jati patanu chintayam. It comes in the 8th chapter, it's text 8. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Pata, is sure to reach me. So it's about someone who practices Smaranam. He meditates about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his mind is remembering Krishna, his pastimes, how he looks, his form, his qualities like his mercy, his compassion, his gratitude towards any little service which is rendered like this. And he, and who becomes steady on this, he's undeviated on the path, is sure to reach me. Now, there is a very interesting purport. Prabhupada says the mind is fickle, and therefore it is necessary to engage the mind by force, to think of Krishna. One example often given is that of the caterpillar that thinks of becoming a butterfly and so is transformed into a butterfly in the same life. Similarly, if we constantly think of Krishna, it is certain that at the end of our lives we shall have the same bodily constitution as Krishna. It's a spiritual body in which we are and in which we associate with Krishna. So this, of course, is an area in our movement which edges on things, on practices like Raganuga Bhakti. It is an area which, for those who are informed, is concerned with our spiritual identity, which is different from this physical body. It is a spiritual feminine existence in many cases, at least for those who follow Rupa Goswami. This is totally different from a male body, but also female body, or male mentality and a female mentality. It is a mentality which is totally pervaded with the desire to serve in a way which is foreign to the conditioned soul. There is not a little amount of selfishness even there. So yeah, so how do we come to this? In our movement there is a lot of stress at the moment on the holy name, which purifies the mirror of the mind by its activities and brings out the spiritual desires which are there. And this is so praiseworthy. Everywhere now you find when devotees meet, eventually they will say, let's sing a little kirtan. And there are big kirtan events, there are smaller kirtan events. Kirtan takes really the first place of sadhana in our movement, and I think that is correct. Mahaprabhu was not known as the incarnation who gave japa, who taught japa, but kirtan, he was doing the, he's the kirtan acharya, and so on. So a lot, our movement has really caught onto this. There are courses, there are retreats all over the world. I would like to say something, add something to this, which I feel is extremely important. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that just like Krishna is never alone but comes with his own Shakti, Srimati Radharani, the holy name is never alone. What? Not? No? No? It comes with Krishna Katha. And this Krishna Katha will give us an understanding about this one thing that makes all the difference between shadow spiritual life and real spiritual life. That is sambandha, chanting with a relationship with Krishna. If you hear about Krishna, in the third canto Prabhupada says Krishna Katha is saving the world. It is compulsory. If you don't hear about Krishna, you will stay in the material world. He's very, very strong on this. Because holy name can only work if you chant. I mean, it works always, but It can only work in giving you your spiritual identity, your Swarup, when you chant with an awareness of Krishna. And from this awareness of Krishna, your natural inclination, which is covered at the moment, which is to serve the Lord with love, and that will go into these five rasas, that will come. But if you don't hear about Krishna, you don't really know who Krishna is.
What do you mean, sorry to interrupt you, what do you mean by awareness of Krishna? Exactly, what does that mean?
Awareness of Krishna is you think of him, you are aware what he does during this time of the day. Isn't it, if I'm interested in someone and I want to make a relationship, I will think, what is he doing at the time of the... For instance, I would not phone you when it's 9 o'clock in the morning, because I know you will are in America and there's a time difference. Most probably you will be sleeping, and I wouldn't like to disturb your rest. Then you will be hazy in the mind and you cannot do the Namrasa podcast, that you cannot focus. So I need to know, if I'm interested in someone really, what are they doing? How is the quality? What do they like? What do they think? And so on. And as a devotee begins to hear regularly, he will be able to practice the first rung on the line of smaranam, or meditating, or remembering Krishna. And that is to bring Krishna into the mind by remembering, wow, I read this in the Krishna book. Ooh, this situation in life reminds me of this. And soon, as you start this flow, as you start to break through the them, so to say, the water of Krishna thought will come more and more. That's why Krishna says, "Man mana, always think of me." It's so crucial, it's so important. And if you now you can think of Krishna when you have a pure mind, and for that you need the holy name. If you the holy name purifies the mind, and then you think, what do we think about in life? Well, the drunkard who will think of wine will think of whiskey. What? Where is it? What is the price? And what is the what works faster? Russian vodka or I'm not an expert. Scottish gin, maybe, or so, and so on. We always, the mind can be shaped, and it will always try to find the exact shape in which it is. When it is shaped for whiskey, it will want to find whiskey, or so on. A sexually very active person and attached person will, when he sees any woman, he will think in those terms about the encounter. You have to see, the mind is a tricky thing, and by Krishna Katha you shape it, and it will want to hear more about Krishna. By other things, some of you may, I mean most of you may be quite experienced in Hollywood movies, and you know, you see one, and this was quite interesting and stimulating. Let me see something in that genre, a detective movie where he goes after the sinful person and he finds everything and he gets him in the end. Yes, because your mind is shaped in the detective movie idea. And others will see maybe scientific documentary. I like to figure this more out. Let me go there. So by hearing about Krishna, the natural inclination starts, and it will go more and more and more until you don't need to bring anything into your mind by your own effort, but it starts to flow, and So, but only when you chant the holy name, that remains the basis. I feel very much, please believe me, I have what to do. I'm from such a family. I'm a little curious about Vaishnav sadhanas. I've studied what is there in the Vaishnava world, and you know, ISKCON is not only the only Vaishnava movement. There are many Vaishnava movements and many ideas, and all of them have shastras. They can argue or let us say substantiate their points nicely and so on. But I always have seen these two things, chanting and hearing the Bhagavatam. It's what Prabhupada gave, and this process is very much in line with, if you study the Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami and so on. It is not an invented process. I'm very happy with this. Yeah.
It seems that chanting, it's not just chanting, it's chanting with absorption, as you mentioned. And we can go our lives, you know, I'm you know, I can say, Maharaj, I'm doing okay. I'm doing my shnik shnik ram ram. I'm kind of going on with life and things are good for me. But that chanting with absorption is a whole different thing, I feel. What are characteristics of absorption in chanting?
A characteristic of absorption is that your mind really becomes avesh. It becomes so much connected with the subject that it is really it's really one. Let me give you an example. I have spoken a lot during this, not so much, but I've spoken in the conference today and then with some people outside, and I decided to have, this is ginger tea, and I put it into water and into this hot tea, and somehow the water has absorbed the ginger taste, and it's very good for oiling the voice and so on. So absorption means just that, you take on the qualities. This water is still water, but we call it now tea because it has absorbed the ginger quality. So in the same way, you absorb your mind in Krishna. How to do it? You just, well, it's very, this is my subject. I could go on for hours, but to make it really, you know, a subject in the sense that I write books about it and give retreats and so on. But, well, an easy path to absorption is you first go into a disturbance-free environment. You need the disturbance-free environment. You need to put your mobile telephone for the time being onto the unavailable mode, and then you.
The kids also in the unavailable mode.
Yeah, yeah. And then the next thing is the mind. First, you start with the body. The body is lazy. Ah, it has this laziness. Ah, I just like to sit and hang out, and I like to look at the kids while I'm chanting or about on something interesting, and maybe at the time I can just take a little of that cake, you know, just to keep me inspired and so on. But the body is lazy. You have to somehow bring the body to a peaceful, undisturbed situation. Somehow. Then the next thing, we go deeper now. This is only the exterior. Then the mind. What you do with the mind is you pull it always back, like Krishna says in the Gita, from wherever it goes due to its restless nature, and bring it to the name. When I'm telling devotees, when you see that your mind has started roaming, God, congratulations, let me shake your hand. You have seen now that the mind has wandered. It is most of the time absent-minded or in its moods or in its hectic state. You have now noticed this, so bring it back to the sound of the holy name and learn this thing of being fully there in the present moment. In the present moment you chant. You don't work. You don't send voice messages or any other messages. This is now the time, your time with Krishna. So bring your mind back in the present. It's a, when you learn this Namrasa, or I think you know, but if we learn this, we will have the side effect of presence. People will notice it, that he is not a distracted person. He is present and his mind works in his favor. And the last thing is the heart. You have to chant with devotion. Now, Haridas Thakur says something very interesting about absorption. He says, no one in this world can control the restless mind. It's stronger than us. No, this is only possible by your mercy. Therefore, it behooves me that I pray for your mercy so that I can control this mind. This is what I do. Maybe it will help you. When I chant in the morning, I say, this is my time now. There's so many things in the day. If I don't chant now, I will not have the time to do it at any other time. So let me be totally present. I air out the room so that there's enough oxygen in order to collect myself a little bit, to collect, you know, to pacify the constant thought traffic up there. I do a few breathings. Then I look at the deities, or when I'm traveling, I'm looking at a picture of the deities. There's Prabhupada always, because we want to chant in the presence of a pure devotee. And there's Radha and Krishna, and then there's Nrisimha Dev. I request him to take the obstacles which are there away, and then I chant, and I always only do one thing. I bring the mind back and I try to chant with some devotion. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells us the perfection of mantra chanting can be attained when you keep the mantra in the heart and at the same time bring the mind back whenever it wanders to material thoughts, as it will. Then one chants with absorption. But really, you can chant for light years. If your mind is always somewhere else, you will not find any taste. You will feel it is difficult for you. But when you have this absorption, then you will like it. And sometimes when you are trying but it doesn't work, just stop and say, my dear Lord, I'm trying, but modern mind, what to do, please help me. And then you pray, and then it is something else. It is so wonderful. You end shadow chanting. To chant with absorption, I will only give one tip here. Chant in a relationship with Krishna. This is not a mechanical process. This is not what you do to get an initiation and a new name. This is not what you do because everyone else does it. This is not what you do in order to get your breakfast. This is something where you practice a relationship with Krishna, who has mercifully come as the holy name.
Good question. A question on that, Maharaj, for me is that I feel sometimes that my relationship with Krishna may be a little damaged from my from my part, in the sense of maybe I feel like I neglect him sometimes, and maybe sometimes I feel I give him attention. So there's that kind of, I don't feel that, you know, when it's with a normal person, you feel, okay, you can't just neglect someone for a long time and then immediately you'll be like, oh, I have a really good relationship with that person. There's this kind of back and forth of acceptance and kind of neglect, I feel sometimes, with my relationship with Krishna. So how do we kind of make that more stabilized so we can have that we can chant with that kind of relationship when that relationship is damaged, I feel like.
Yeah. That's the problem. The relationship is damaged, and we are the only ones who bear here the responsibility Krishna wants. But we are. I have noted over the years that Krishna, when someone sincerely turns to him, is immediately there. And there's this prayer in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna say to Mar. It says, Krishna, since so many long years in this material world, I have totally neglected and ignored you. But today, I'm turning to you as your sincere and serious servant. Please accept me. And it's a beautiful prayer. It has a lot of philosophical connotations in it. It resembles the famous Brahma Sambandha mantra of the Vallabha Sampradaya and the Buddha Shuddhi prayers of our Sampradaya. Krishna, you know, with a normal person, when you neglect the relationship, or worse still, you do something that is maybe hurtful, you can't come back just like this. It is not possible. The person will ignore you and say, I have a little honor in my heart. I can't just now open up after all you did and said and so on. But Krishna is really different. He values very much this turning point. The Vaishnava world has grieved a few months ago when Pankajangri Prabhu, one of the two twin brothers who did this Pujari service for so long, when he left his body so suddenly. And I remember once I was driving with Pankajangri Prabhu to some summer festival in south of France, and I told him, I revealed my heart, you know, it was a long drive, and I said, Pankajangri Prabhu, I'm very doubtful of one thing, and this doubt creates some pain in my heart. I just can't imagine that Krishna, who is so absolutely transcendental, who's absorbed in his Leela, who's beyond the Brahman, will take care of a conditioned soul like me, who's still with a mind and so on. And Pankajangri thought about the question for some time. We were driving in the car, so we said, let us chant around and then I will give you an answer I sincerely feel about. And after some this time, he said to me, when a material parent is seeing how their little children are running towards them to catch their attention, and on the way they quarrel and they they elbow each other, and one of them passes stool in the midst of the running. That happens, and it is smelling intensely. The parent will like the children anyways and accept the children anyways, because they're sincerely running despite their quarreling amongst themselves and doing all kinds of unusual activities the children sometimes do, because they understand. So if the Supreme Father, Krishna describes himself as the father and the mother of all creatures, see, someone is sincerely turning, then it works. But you have to just be sincere. Prabhupada once was asked, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And he said, it may not happen after many lifetimes, but it can happen in 1 second. It depends on the sincerity of purpose. The word sincerity is very interesting. It comes from the Latin word sinicera. Sinicera, sine means without, and cera means wax, you know, like candle wax. When the Roman Empire just expanded and exploded due to their intensely effective military techniques, they are the marble industry in Italy went up like anything, because everyone could have an amazing and fast career in the Roman army, and they got a lot of money, and then they wanted to build a villa, and the preferred building material was marble. So then so much demand came up because it really expanded. You can read in history books. And the marble industry started to cheat. They had not such good blocks of marble, but they put some wax on the tooth. It's almost like when your teeth are rotten and you stick some wax there and you put a little whitish thing there, and your smile looks very Hollywood-like. But it's cheating. When after some time, you know, whatever you put in there, it will fall out, and you look like a monster in the mouse, you know. So the marble industry did just like that. They took deformed marble blocks, put some wax. But this would not work when the hot Italian summer sun came, and all this melted and it looked really, 10th class marble. So the Roman Senate had to discuss this, and they made this law sinicera, without wax. You know, if you put wax there, then they had some punishment. I forgot, some heavy punishment, you know. So sincerity means, first of all, be honest. Look at your situation as it is. You don't need to put on a false facade. Krishna looks anyways at you. Be honest, and when there is something that needs improvement, pray for help, and so on. That type of sincerity will melt Krishna's heart. Lord Chaitanya is known as Patita Pavana, the deliverer of the fallen. Prabhupada says this. He's known as Patita Pavana, not as Kapata Pavana, the savior of the pretenders. He's not known like this. He's Patita. So it doesn't help. It is not bad to be Patita. Do you know, Namras, all the goddesses have their vahana, their carrier. Lord Vishnu comes on Garuda, that we know. Shivaji comes riding on Nandi, the bull. Ganga Mai comes on a white crocodile. Parvati, I believe, comes on a lion, sometimes tiger. Yes. What is the carrier of the beautiful goddess of bhakti? That's a very good question. I also didn't know, but it will make immediately sense. It's the humility of the devotee. When a devotee is humble, this humility has to be supplied by the devotee himself. This carrier, I wanted to say, has to be supplied by the devotee, and then Bhakti Devi comes riding on that beautiful carrier right into the heart of any bhakta who is humble. And then they feel enlivened and inspired. Their natural desire to be of service and please the Lord is manifesting, because the heart is just purified from these external obstacles, and this is very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Humility is very important. I love that about Bhakti Devi. Carrier is on the humility of the devotee. Amazing. I love that. Maharaj, maybe we can go into now talking a little bit about why do you go to Vrindavan on an annual holy name retreat or marathon? You've been doing that for many years now. What part has that played in transformation in your life and in the life of what you've seen others that you've helped?
Yeah, I told you that in 25 years ago, I was not satisfied. I thought nothing has really happened inside of me, not much at least. And I thought, how can I really change this? And I discovered at that time, the second time, the holy name. The second time because I learned I had to chant with absorption. And I felt it's good maybe to change the place. In Europe, I'm super active as a preacher. Now in pandemic times, I have tried to present things on the online. I'm like this. This is my service to Prabhupada, and it may be easier for me to stop everything and just focus on the holy name in Vrindavan. So I started to go there. I looked for places where I was undisturbed. I always took a servant with me, an assistant who would cook and take care of everything around, and then went for 1 month on this. And I'm very honest. I think I owe a lot to chanting in this very favorable atmosphere of Vrindavan, where even the dust, it says, can give you love of Godhead. It's not like Hyderabad dust, says Prabhupada, or Germany dust, or so on. This dust, Krishna walked with his feet, and the love which he felt sipped or came through the feet. Krishna's love comes through the flute, and he plays the flute, various devotees hear it differently. The gopis hear it, come, come, come. But it also, Krishna's love comes through his feet and is imprinted on the dust of Vrindavan. And I can only say it did so much. It changed so much. And the most important change which I could see was that I started to think Krishna-centered and not so much ego-centered. I remember one wake-up call. You know, I had done a Govardhan Parikrama. It was easy, and I usually in the evening do the Damodarashtakam, where I offer a light to Lord Damodar, and I was still a little away from my place, so I offered a little light to Giriraj Govardhan, knowing that he is non-different from Lord Krishna. I offered and I sing my Damodarastaka prayer to this devata, and then afterwards I've learned that it's not good to extinguish a sacred fire. You let it burn until it naturally comes to the end. So I put the Givik on one of the Giriraj stones, shilas, big shilas are there, and I continued with the parikrama. Then all of a sudden, from the darkness, a little girl came and started to really attack me and beat me. And I thought, yes, they are very poor, so they need Lakshmi or anything. And I, I just held her like this and said, "Natik is not good. You can't do this," and so on. But she was furious, and I just thought it rupees. What do you want, rupees or what is the? No, nay, rupees, no rupees, no rupees. And then she started to scream at me, "Murk, murk, murk, fool, fool, fool." I thought, I will, what to do, I will not be aggressive, this is a bridge Parsi, so. And then she pulled me to the place where I had placed the Givik and showed it and said, "Giriraj, madhu, very sweet, very sweet. But is it deep? Very hot, hot." She first said the Hindi word. I didn't understand what she wanted. "Hot, hot, hot." So I was burning the Lord whom I worshipped. That's what her message was to me. And she was really surprised to see that insensitivity in me. And when this happens to you, and it happens in the holy land of Vrindavan, you think, why didn't I see that? It is, yes, it is. She's absolutely correct. And I paid my obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and I said, I think for this lesson. And these are things which happen. There are many such things which happen. Like this, and you just become something in you changes. I will tell you another thing. I was chanting under this particular tree where it said Madhavendra Puri, chanted, and a long time was there, and it was hot, and then a nice pleasant rainfall started, and for a moment I thought, "Oh, thank you, my Lord, that you do some refreshment here, send some refreshment." But when I looked up, it was a monkey who was aiming his pipe at me and urinated at me. And you know, monkey urine, and it's very hard to get that out of the cloth. And I was just so, I felt just so angry that I lost it. I just got a brick, or not a whole brick, some part of a brick, and wanted to hurl it at that monkey. So at that moment, one sadhu who had seen the whole thing came to me and said, "I have umbrella." thinking that why should we harm a resident of Vrindavan? You know, they were first here, and most probably I was at the spot or whatever. I have umbrella, and he brought me this black umbrella, and I here I'm sitting. And there's still some sound on the umbrella. and I begin to think, well, this is a more sattvic way of dealing with this problem. and many of such things begin to change your paradigms, you know, how you perceive the world and how you react towards the world. Therefore, I owe Vrindavan a lot. The classroom of Vrindavan is not always very, very gentle. You also get very heavy lessons there. I told you the easy digestible lessons, but there are other lessons. But whatever it is, Prabodhananda Sarasvati says, Vrindavan, you are like my mother. You take me on the lap. Like you take a little child on the lap, and things happen very, very nice. Then Bhujan Prabhu came with whom I'm friend. He said, why don't we start a retreat so that devotees can also hear about Krishna and chant about Krishna in the holy land of Vrindavan? And we started. Our listeners will like this. We started in the forest. It's just after Jatipur on the way to Govardhan town, and we went under the barbed wire, and then we went to these trees, and we just did Shravanam Kirtanam there in that sanctified atmosphere. And from this initial, we had like 24 participants, really is a small number. From this initial group, the group expanded. We have now 450, sometimes more, because not everyone needs to register. Some can come on a daily level from Vrindavan. And Giriraj gave us a beautiful retreat center. We built a beautiful retreat center just next to Giriraj, where devotees who want to go a little bit deeper in their spiritual life can go. There are seminars, but there are also rooms where they can just, I think in America we would say, chill out, and then read and chant in that beautiful atmosphere. It is not yet open because the pandemic came in between, but I heard theoretically we could open it this year, but we will wait another year because things are still a little uncertain. So from the first Nam Seva, which I did in Vrindavan, other Seva has come where I can now try to serve the international devotee community with well-prepared seminars on mostly of Goswami books, and go a little bit deeper than one can do in a sure. in a podcast and so on.
Mm-hmm. Usually, Maharaj, we take questions, but I want to be mindful of your time. So I'd like to now just ask you if you could give us some parting words for this topic, spiritual transformation.
First of all, I want to encourage all of us, all of our listeners. It is possible to experience the gifts of bhakti. It is possible. It just requires a little faith, even if your faith has been broken thousands of times. And then again, this is a process which has been given in an ancient tradition, the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. And just the fact that it is around and that there is such a good, that there's so much interest in this, in the world, and in the, and we have such a nice devotee community all over the world. Sometimes also problematic devotee community, but I don't really make a difference. You know, human beings have always been human beings, and sometimes, yes, there's problems, so needs to be solved. So now I want to give faith to all of you. Please try to sincerely work on your spiritual life. And it's so easy. Just any real chanting and any little, let us see, hearing about Krishna will call this Bhakti Devi with her Bhakti Shakti into the heart. And then everything is done, even despite of you. It's just like Prabhupada's example of putting iron into the fire, and it absorbs the fiery quality. Just keep it in the fire, don't take it out, and after some time it is red, hot and glowing. This is my little few words of encouragement. It was a pleasure. I hope the listeners have some benefit from here. I do know on your podcast we often discuss subjects of interest, and sometimes there are also slightly controversial subjects, in the sense that there are many different opinions, and I think that's very important to create a forum where this is discussed. And this time, I am what I am. I can only talk on these subjects. So I've tried. But thank you very much for guiding us so nicely through the interview. It was a genuine pleasure, and I hope to see you and give you a warm embrace, you know.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. There was about 160 people watching at one point through all of our platforms, so it was very well attended. And thank you so much. I always say this, but I personally am very selfish when I do these interviews, because I get to associate with the devotees like yourself when I do these interviews. And I feel so enlivened to hear about Krishna and about the holy name from you, particularly today. And I'd like to also say, if you want to follow, for our listeners, if you'd like to follow His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, you can follow him on Instagram. He has his team that runs his Instagram account. It's the handle is there, Sachinanda Swami Official. You can follow it on Instagram. There's a lot of great content that's put out there, also on Facebook as well. So thank you again, Maharaj, so much for joining us. It was really wonderful. Next week, we will be having, on Sunday, His Holiness Giriraj Swami will be joining us. We have a kind of a Swami theme in a little bit. So Maharaj will be coming on and be talking about his new book that he wrote, and it just came out, and also a little bit about his experiences in Krishna consciousness as well. Really looking forward to that. Maharaj, if you could please stay on, I'm going to turn off the live. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. Have a great... Yes.
One thing before you go, there's someone who wants to say goodbye to everyone. This is Gokrishna.
For those of you who don't know him, he's a wonderful Kirtaniya and a wonderful assistant of Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the podcast, Naman. It was amazing.
Yes, no problem. It was so wonderful. Let me turn off the live and we'll talk for just a few minutes. Yeah. Yes. Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for listening.